You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. Sally from Finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But I love eating people. I love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic. There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. Seeing a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
Welcome back to Chris's Corn Podcast. I'm the great pal from Mr. E.
Dang.
I'm
Jake. You're scaring me. I'm Jake Cohen 347. I'm on edge.
Monsters That Made Us, part two.
What did you take this morning?
I wanted to really surprise you. Unscripted. Oh, gosh. The Monsters That Made Us, part two. Before we get into that, let's break into some new things. Don't have any new reviews. Don't have any new Patreon members.
Oh.
As far as...
Sad day.
I think we do have new Patreon members. I just didn't pull up a list.
Oh, okay.
For this. Cons. We have Crypticon coming up, I think, in 2 weeks as of when this episode comes out. If you're coming to Crypticon... Let us know, post it on the Facebook page. So Friday, Saturday night, we normally do hangouts with you guys at Crypticon in the hotel or nearby. There's like a Cracker Barrel or something like that we go
to. Yeah.
So if you want to hang out after the festival, let us know. I try to make a group chat or something like that just to let everybody know we're going. We love hanging out with you guys. If you're coming to hang out with us, we want to hang out with you.
Come to Crypticon.
To Crypticon. It's a lot of fun. Crypticon's a lot of fun.
You can buy something
new. Is the book is printed. It's here. The Living UFOs, The Ocean Above Our Heads, A Study of Atmospheric Biology.
It's here.
I memorized the title finally.
Finally.
Wrote the title and it took me forever to memorize it. Dyslexia.
You just had to see it in front of your face.
I took a copy to my mom and I'm like, not too bad for a kid that can't write or read.
Yeah, exactly.
And she did the same thing Emily did. She's like, the name is spelled wrong.
Oh, like, no.
I ordered a lot of these.
Just to mess with you.
Everybody thinks it's funny because I can't read or write.
Yeah, you wouldn't know.
I would know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's actually how Justin spelled.
Right, yeah.
With a Y in the middle.
And some other letters that don't need to be there.
And X is silent.
Yeah, true.
But no, the book's here. It's my first book. Thank you for everybody that helped. If you want one, here's how you can get it. You can go to Crypticon and we'll have it premiering there. If you want a signed copy, that's fine. I would love to sign it for you. It will be the Crypticon. It'll be available on the website the following Monday. So that is November 25th for not a limited run. I'll keep ordering books depending on how many guys you want. I normally ship out on Monday. If you want it signed, there's a little tab. You can click signed. I'll draw a little jellyfish in it for you.
Sweet.
My mom got the first one this morning. She wanted the jellyfish in it.
Nice.
So yeah, super excited. It's been an amazing process. So thank you. I got to thank Alex and I got to thank Michael for all the help that went into it. And of course, Jay.
Oh, you're welcome.
So thank you guys.
Hopefully I didn't miss anything in my proofreadings.
Hey, at this point I could be like, Jay, Emily, and Alex read it and edited it and everything like that.
It's their
at
fault.
This point, the kid with the IEP, it's not his fault. At this point.
Wait, IEP?
Individual Education Program. It's
Okay.
My messed up brain.
No ass. I was going to say the one in summer school, but wait, that was me.
No, I wasn't in summer school. They did not want me.
They took me, all because I didn't do homework.
So you can get it on CrimsonCorn.com. You get it on our website under the book tab. You can get it if you're international and you want to get it off of Amazon, you can. I would prefer if you can buy it off of ours.
Right,
if you're
our
international,
website.
You can go to Amazon. If you want a signed copy, reach out. If you're international, we'll figure it out. I know there's already a couple Australians that have messaged me that they want signed copies, and we're working on the shipping thing right now. Hometown Legends, I'm still looking. Please send in your Hometown Legends. I don't care if it's a cryptid, a ghost, that paranormal spook lights, any of it. Send it in, and we'll kind of have a conversation. That's for a special project.
Anything local.
Anything local.
Pertaining to you.
All right. Ready to get into some monsters that made us?
Yeah, part two.
Part two. Let's recap real fast.
Okay.
We did last week.
Yes.
So the short-faced bear, a long-time standing member of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Talked about the short-faced bear many, many times. And since last week, I've actually seen a video about short-faced bears compared to brown bears.
Oh.
And just their anatomy. Like, it was a really cool video just showing how different their anatomies were.
Yeah.
Like, short-faced bears are built more like a bison or an elk when you really look at them.
Your phone was listening to us record that episode, so it brought you up.
Oh, I thought you lit up right now. I'm like, I don't even know what it is.
I mean, to pull up the, you know, the short-faced brown bear comparison, because we literally just talked about that.
Yeah. So, but if you look at, like, their body build, are completely different. Obviously, you know, short-faced bears were larger, and they loved eating us and bears.
Right, yeah.
But they'd also chase animals down like bison. You know, they'd just keep the herd moving
right
that whole time. So, yeah, short-faced bears, longtime member of the show. We even covered sightings with short-faced bears alive day, cryptids angle of it. The next one was Homotherium,
mm-hmm.
which was a new guy to the show. Big cat, a saber cat, not a saber-toothed tiger, a saber-toothed cat. Native to Africa and Europe mostly. Just went extinct about the 10,000-year-ago mark, like a lot of these guys. Very, very large, about the size of a lion, but, you know, single hunter, you know, solitary, and very good at eating humans. And humans were probably direct link to their extinction, quote unquote.
Most of these things were.
It's all of them.
Yeah, it's a theme.
So in between these two episodes, I try to add animals, and I kind of talked to you about it for this episode. And I took them both off because they were both probably single episode worthy. That.
Oh, so big.
Yeah.
Big guys, I guess.
I'll give you a hint for future episodes. So one was a unicorn and one was a dragon. And I removed them from the list.
I think I know both of them.
I don't think you do. I really don't think you do, because I think the animal we're going to start with today is who you think the dragon is.
Hmm. Komodo dragon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Megalania.
Megalania, the one from Australia.
Yeah. So our first monster. You fidget so much.
I'm sorry.
Do you need me to pause it?
It's the coffee.
Do you want me to pause it so you're going to get adjusted? You're making all kinds of noise.
Am I?
Yes.
It's the coffee. There we go. I'm sorry. I think I'm better now.
Megalania.
Megalania.
So we'll talk about Megalania and all this in a minute. But Megalania was probably the first animal that the native Australians met more than 40,000 years ago when they came onto the continent.
That would have been quite a sight to see.
Megalanias are, for like Jay's already said, absolutely monstrous Komodo dragons.
Big guys.
And there's been a trend with paleontology of them downsizing animals right now. And then they're reestimating size estimates. So we'll talk about that with Megalania.
Okay.
But this is a huge Australian lizard that lived at the end of the Pleistocene epoch, which name means giant roamer in Greek.
Okay.
Which really fits to their behaviors.
Right, okay.
They didn't really have a territory or anything like that. They were always on the move. They were once common in Australia. So keep in mind, they weren't, as apex predators go, they were pretty common. But Australia also has no megafauna actively right now, no native megafauna.
Right. Well,
and relatively recently, they still did.
Right, on the record, that is.
Like wombats the size of hippos and that kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
which they were their own monsters for the Aborigines.
Hmm.
Wombats, Yeah, they kind of have a bad attitude.
I just watched a thing on wombats, how they kill.
With their butt?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They got really hard butt bones, and they'll burrow into a hole.
And they just slam their butt. They booty shake and kill animals trying to eat them.
They torque them to death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. So an Angelus naturalist is credited for the first really fossil remains of this, Richard Owen, Megalania fossils. And he named it Megalania persei. The species were later placed in the Varnas genus, which is Komodo dragons.
Okay.
The giant monitors.
Yeah.
They're compared to appearance in a Komodo dragon or a parenti, which, do you remember the Rescue Rangers?
Chippendales.
No, okay, not the Rescue Rangers. The two mice that were on the albatross.
From Down Under? Rescuers from Down Under.
That was the movie, but they had several movies.
Oh, okay.
Because the first one was the little girl they rescued from the alligator lady in Florida.
I do, but I don't.
Anyways, from the rescue or the rescue down under.
Okay.
Sorry, Joanna, the lizard, the Disney, like the lizard that the guy Cliff had. She was a parenti.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So it just makes me laugh that, you know, because it's like, I give you eagle eggs, I give, or any, you know, tries to get her to eat eggs. So these are two animals that believe to be closely related to Megalania today. And if you listen to our original Megalania episode, you hear more about that Komodo dragons Megalania actually may be subspecies of the same animal.
Mm-hmm.
So now, estimates put this guy between 15 and 26 feet long.
Jeez.
I do not believe that. I think they were much larger than that.
Oh, you think even bigger?
Yeah, the original size estimate was 40 feet.
Man. That's huge.
Yeah. Oh, these were monsters.
Did they ever find like any fossils that could indicate?
They're broken right now. So you're using pieces.
Like fragments. Yeah.
Fragmented fossils. Depending on which lizards is stated above, the Megalania is closest related to in the phylogical tree. The question of Megalania's length is in question. So basically, is it a parenti body length? You know, we're talking about the scaling between the length of the torso versus length of the tail and that kind of stuff versus the Komodo dragon. Depending, like, we got chunks of these Megalania fossils and their footprints and that kind of stuff. So it's hard to guess the length based on their living relatives.
Right.
And that's the most accurate way to do it. But there are still problems when we do that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Animals, individual species can have their own size, you know, characteristics. I personally believe, especially when we get to Aboriginal legends with these guys, that they are much larger than 26 feet.
Okay.
I think they push 35, if not 40 feet long.
That's a monster.
And I'm talking, those are the big, big ones.
Yeah.
I think they're more average between the 15 and 20 feet long.
Okay.
For the average individual. And we see that Komodo dragons. That there are titans on the islands of Komodo that are, you know, huge, you know, for those 12, 13 foot long lizards. And most of them are going to be around that 6 foot length.
The big alpha male.
Or females. Or
female, just, I guess.
Old.
Okay.
You know, they live long enough. They don't ever stop growing. So Megalania definitely was in this family group. The exact location in their genus is unclear. That's what we're talking about with trying to figure out where they are in the monitor lizards. A lot of people think they are sister taxona to Komodo dragons, which is kind of what we were talking about, that they are very, very close related. This indicates that the two species are equally removed from their common ancestor. So that means they split off of one species of lizard about the same time. Inquiries also reveals that these animals would have weighed around 4,200 pounds.
Yeah, that's a big boy.
Yeah. That's a
couple size tons.
About the size of a hippo, weight-wise.
It's pretty big.
Lizard may have weighed, just monsters. Most people, though, estimate they weighed between 700 and 1,000 pounds.
That's still pretty big.
Keep my big Komodo dragons today, or at least what we have of bones, you know, put them at 500 pounds.
Yeah.
I think they are much larger. I think there's this thing in paleontology right now where they're downsizing all these animals.
Is that like a new trend?
Yes.
And why? I guess.
It's just paleontology has trends in it where, because one famous guy said one thing, you know, we talked about this with science, is it's many people, many individuals in science that don't agree with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So if the main guys are saying that, you know, oh, we got size estimates wrong, they actually, most of these animals are smaller, then most of the other guys are going to agree.
Like, oh, yeah. I don't know.
Let's talk about their behavior. So most of these guys spend a lot of time close to shallow water. That's what a lot of monitor lizards do. They're not all monitor lizards. There's plenty of desert monitor lizards in Australia. Komodo dragons are actually excellent swimmers. They don't really hunt the water like a lot of other monitor lizards, but they swim island to island.
Very well.
Yeah, very well. Additionally, they are, like I said, very powerful swimmers and even skilled divers. Komodo dragons have been seen to dive down for certain food sources and stuff like that. They don't do it very often because they get the chance of being swept out to sea.
Right.
But if they're hungry, they will.
Yep.
And if the tree is sturdy enough to support them, they also believe Megalania was a good climber. Most of the time, they believe they climbed in rocks and would actually live in holes and caves and stuff like that.
Kind of like that, what was it, Crosswick monster?
Yes.
That they chased.
It lived in a hole underneath a log, and then they chased it into a cave.
Yeah.
And then they murdered it.
Mm-hmm.
So, given its size, Megalania was an apex predator of the prehistoric ecology of Australia. Megalania was a carnivore, and they'd eat everything. So Komodo dragons, why we keep comparing them to do, because they probably are the most closely related, or like they said, Parentes, which Parentes are much more confident in desert terrains just as much as wetland terrains.
Okay.
Komodo dragons really don't, they really can't get that far from water living on the islands of Komodo, because they're islands.
You're right. You walk so far one way, you're going to run into water. But you
look at like croc monders and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
They are semi-aquatic. They are spending a lot of time in the water. But you look at like green tree monitors, which are, they have long prehensile tails. They live in the trees almost their whole life. So monitor lizards are a very developed group of animals that are highly intelligent. And I want to push that on a little harder, is that monitor lizards as a whole group, there are, you know, less intelligent species. As a whole group, though, they are tend to be highly intelligent and highly problem-solving.
Okay.
And if you look at their food sources, Komodo dragons are wrestlers, you know, when it comes down to it, wrestling. Before we brought cows and stuff like that, they were eating a lot of deer and pygmy elephants and those kind of things. So they were, you know, good at fighting large game.
Bite them and roll them to the ground, basically?
Well, they bite them and they would hold on for a minute to inject the venom that we had.
That's
and then
right.
They let go and follow.
Okay.
And that's wait. Some of the early white settlers or white explorers to the islands of Komodo would say that was, and their generals said, they write, what's the worst part? They got bit 3 days ago. And they're just being followed by an army of them. And the dragons aren't, they're not dumb.
They're just waiting for them to
drop. Yeah, they're like, yeah. It's not worth the risk of going in and fighting.
Right, yeah.
He's going to be dead soon.
Right, yeah. We'll get the carcass.
The smell actually attracts other dragons.
Like when a bee stings you?
Kind of, yeah. So any questions about Megalania so far?
Big lizards.
So let's talk about their impact with humans. Like I said, Megalania seems that they went extinct a little after humans got to Australia.
Okay.
So it seems like there's a direct relationship. Correlation, there.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's estimated that Megalania went extinct between 40 and 50,000 years ago.
Okay.
And about 65,000 years ago, humans first set foot on the Australian continent. So okay. They didn't make it very long after humans was got there.
So were they already on their way out, or did we just kind of push them out?
I think it's a little bit of both.
Okay.
Because Australia's megafauna was also struggling.
Okay.
So I don't think Megalania would have fully went extinct without people. Same thing when we talk about with many of these big animals.
Mm-hmm.
Is that if they held on past certain mass extinctions, they probably would have made it. Humans were a lot of the times the final nail. Is that their species were already kind of on the fringes. And they probably could have bounced back if they were left alone with no new apex predators.
Yeah.
And kind of pushed them out. Like mammoths. Humans aren't the reason mammoths went extinct. They're the last nail in the coffin.
We just finished off the last mammoths. We just helped.
But they went from, you know, 4 million individuals to 65,000 individuals before humans were really hunting them in mass. So, you know, already right there. So Megalania's demise had something to do with humans. We just don't really know what. And we're going to talk about the Aboriginal legends with Megalania because they still have them in cave paintings that they can still read today. Although they may have been a predator of human, it wasn't necessarily the case that people hunted Megalania to extinction. Rather, that they emerged and wiped out the last remaining prey sources
For
Megalania.
Okay.
Humans at this point avoided Megalania like the plague. So Aboriginals would tell stories. They have fires now and stuff like that, but they used to tell about times where they wouldn't have fires at night. And it was because of these dragons.
Yeah, they would draw them in, right?
Yeah, so the Megalania they're cold-blooded. They're humongous cold-blooded animals. They're, depending on who you talk to, probably about the biggest a true cold-blooded animal could be.
Okay.
Like dinosaurs, they're arguing whether they were ectothermic or endothermic. Ecto meaning cold-blooded, endo meaning warm-blooded, or a hybrid system. So some primitive birds had a hybrid system, so that makes us think that maybe some dinosaurs had a hybrid system.
Kind of like the cave goats.
Cave goats, yes. Like the
as featured on Freaky Fauna Friday.
The worst animal ever.
Yeah, they were cold-blooded mammals.
Yeah, so they didn't really have a hybrid system. They went backwards, and okay. Then they died.
And then they died.
Because they were eating each other's skulls.
The cave goat. I love the cave goat.
The worst mammal ever. be featured on the Freaky Fauna coloring book coming out in 2025.
That's right. If you haven't listened to Freaky Fauna Friday, check that one out. And check out
the skinky skulled cave goat.
Yes.
Now I've lost my train of
thought. Sorry. That cave goat, he ties a lot of things together.
So the Aborigines wouldn't have fires at night due to these guys being drawn in by it. So these guys, Aborigines would talk about that these monsters are not monsters. They talk of more revere and respect with them. You know, Aborigines respect a lot of the wildlife that they lived with. But they kind of would paint them, I'm not a great with Aboriginal folklore and spiritualism, but the Dreamland, they had animals that were in the Dreamland. They had in-between animals, and they had natural animals.
Okay.
They kind of put the Megalania as either the top of the natural animals or the in-between animals.
Okay.
So they had a lot of respect for the Megalania.
Right, yep.
So they would purposely avoid their areas. They'd purposely, as far as we know, there was very, very little hunting done from the Megalanias. Like, people weren't hunting these things.
Mm-hmm.
And so Megalania, why they wouldn't have fires is they'd be drawn in at night. They're cold-blooded. They want the heat source. And then they would eat everybody around the fire.
Right. Just eat them and then lay on their fire.
So if it's a 30-foot-long lizard, there's not a lot you can do. And you have this idea that they don't move fast, and they could run probably about 20 miles an hour.
Well, if anyone's ever seen a Komodo dragon run, they can scoot.
But they don't look like it, right? They look like potatoes with legs.
Yeah. But once they get going, they move fast.
They move quick. The Aborigines had a lot of respect for these guys. It shaped a lot of areas. Aborigines wouldn't go into whole areas because they said that this was the home of Komodo dragons. Are you going to say something?
I just think it's crazy. I mean, that's about all.
Yeah, like I said, they had almost a spiritualistic respect
right, for
the great roamer. And there's all these stories. They also called him, I believe that was their name, roughly translated, living logs.
Mm-hmm.
These things were so big, they look like fallen trees that were just walking around.
If a local or a native of any area ever tells you, we don't go in this area because of this specific animal, you should probably,
there's monsters live there.
You should probably listen to them. Because if anyone knows how to take care of them, it's the locals, the natives. And if they're not even willing to deal with them, neither should you. Just a little PSA.
It was for whatever British colonialism, exploring, all that stuff, the dumb native idea.
Right.
It always makes me laugh. The people that live there with these animals and these things.
For generations.
Forever. And they're like, yeah, big lizard lives there.
Yeah, all right, buddy.
All right, big lizard. Your parentes are scary.
Yeah.
No, there's one in there that's 40 feet long. It eats cows.
Dodongo's cavern.
What's that?
That's from also a Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time reference. He's a big lizard that lives in Death Mountain. You have to fight him. It's probably about 40 feet long.
Okay.
Literally the same thing.
So that's the Aborigines respect these guys. They'd avoid him. They painted him. They still read about him. There's actually a story of an Aborigine, and this was only from the 1800s,
mm-hmm.
seeing a dead white shark wash up, which Australia has tons and tons of white sharks, great white sharks.
Oh, great whites, okay.
They're called white sharks in the rest of the world.
Right, yeah.
We
just made them great.
They are great. They're pretty impressive. They're the biggest carnivorous shark, fully predatory shark. Hmm. As far as, actively predatory, because the good thing, Greenland sharks get bigger, but they're more scavengers.
Right,
they get that big. So there's stories of them seeing a dead white shark and having a megalania that these guys hadn't seen forever. Just walk out on a beach and grab the shark and start eating it. And then when it was done, went back into the forest.
Wow.
And these guys have been we lived here our whole life, never knew it was in there.
Yeah.
So there may be this mutual either respect or knowledge that after a while, maybe there was humans for a long time that fought back against megalania. And the megalania know to avoid people.
Mm-hmm.
Komodo dragons are people that live on the islands of Komodo. Where these people these white settlers would crash and then immediately be murdered by the giant lizards.
Right.
And the people that live there are like, yeah, you build your house in a stilt and you only go out at night because Komodo dragons shut off at night.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. You can kind of mess with them and stuff like that when it's dark.
You think they just... Because
they have no predators besides each other.
Right, yeah, exactly.
So as long as they all turn off, they're all good.
Right, exactly. Each other and us, that's it.
So this kind of promotes that spiritual idea with these monsters. Let's talk about some cryptids with Megalania.
All right.
So the idea that Megalania still exists in Australia has tons and tons of sightings to this day.
Yeah.
The Australian rainforest, if you're new to this show and you haven't listened to our Australian rainforest episodes, please go back and do. Because there's some of the most crazy stuff in the Australian rainforest. It is the most unexplored rainforest on the planet. The top four out of the five are all in Australia.
Yep. And that was my biggest takeaway from that episode. Oh, no, I did it. I just did it.
That was your biggest takeaway from the episode is what?
My biggest takeaway from that episode we did was the fact that I think they're still out there. I think they're still existing. And I think there's evidence for that. I think they're just still there. It's just very rare, and they're very secretive now as compared to before, you know, what they were before, because their numbers are probably lower.
And then Komodo dragons also have parthenogenesis, so they can produce their own offspring. Like themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that also helps for low populations.
Mm-hmm.
That's how Komodo dragons actually survived on the island. You can see in the fossil record several times they almost went extinct on their own island.
And then
they would save themselves back.
Yep.
All right. So let's take a look at what we know about the unbelievable sage of seeing Megalania to this day. Reports have surfaced from Australia of such a creature. Weird Australia notes that sightings of massive lizards in Australia were recorded in both the later part of the 19th century and the early decades of the 20th century. Some of the old reports cited in Weird Australia sound like much like a surviving Megalania. Arnold Justice, in the article Megalania, Dragons of the Australian Outback, notes, Megalania may not be concentrated only to Australia. Some sightings suggest that they may live in New Guinea.
Okay.
Which there are plenty of Australian fauna that end up in New Guinea.
And some flora. That's pretty amazing, too. If you listen to our Patreon episode.
Oh, yeah. This week.
Yep.
The trees.
Mm-hmm.
A French priest in the 1960s was traveling upriver with a native guide in order to reach his missionary. During this trip, he spotted an extremely large lizard laying on a fallen tree sunning itself. Cryptozoologist Rex Gilroy was able to put together a dossier of such an encounter. One in particular was well worth noting. Gilroy, during the course of the investigation, claimed that the Megalania still lives, and good fortune to meet with a soldier named Steve, who told Gilroy of a fascinating and terrifying story. Yeah, before I read, their tracks are very unique, and there's been several tracks these guys found, too.
Okay.
But sunning themselves, Komodo dragons do that all the time. They're cold-blooded.
They have to.
They get this, like, Komodo dragons, if you've ever been around them, they're very, very intelligent. There are several zoos that have keepers that actually go in and work with the animals. They're very dangerous to work with if you don't know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because keep in mind, they are venomous.
Right.
They have glands that produce venom, but they have to chew to inject it.
Okay.
So they don't have fangs like a snake.
Right. They gotta chew you open, make a wound,
They are quite easily able to do it.
Right.
Because it's very large.
It's in their saliva, right?
Yeah. Okay. They just kind of leak into their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so sunning itself is very believable. But they have this kind of cockiness to them when they get really big.
Okay.
They know what they are, right? Yeah. They're not dumb.
Right.
So when people dealing with really large Komodo dragons, little ones are running from you. Some of these big ones in the islands of Komodo will just look at you and kind of size you up. They don't like people because they've been killed by people. They're like, I can do some damage back to you.
Right.
If this is coming down to it.
Right, yeah.
So Steve said this. It was in the late 1968. Steve was serving in the Australian military at the time. He was taking part in an excursion into Queensland, specifically on what was termed the Normandy Ridge. One part of the excursion required Steve's unit to negotiate a particularly treacherous and dense, swampy rainforest area.
Uh-oh.
It's Australian rainforest.
Not good.
The team did so and came upon something highly disturbing. The vicious, ripped apart body of a cow that had been dragged there. So a cow something had been dragged there.
Yeah, something drug
ripped
cow.
A cow apart.
Okay.
Not only that, something had dragged the cow a considerable time before savagely ripping apart huge chunks of the unfortunate animal. More significantly, lizard-like prints were found in the muddy ground, all which were close to 2 feet in length.
Okay.
The footprint was 2 foot in length.
That's pretty big. That's a big thing.
As amazing as Steve's story was, it still is. It's very well been nothing less than a close-up and hazardous encounter with the meandering monster of science and zoology, assuring to be extinct tens of thousands of years ago, by which, against all odds, might still be out there. Remember that if you choose to trek through the subtropical terrain of Australia, there are plenty other monsters besides big lizards.
Yes, that's true.
No, so that's one. Like I said, we had a whole episode on Megalania. Please go listen to that. I had probably a dozen. And there were a lot of modern accounts. One was, and I'm just going to paraphrase it, one of my favorite ones was the couple that just seen, and they didn't know about Megalania. They were native to Australia, or they weren't native Australian. They, you know, it's a couple generations of white settlers in Australia.
Right.
And they were on this backcountry road, and they watched what they said was like a 12-foot-long Komodo dragon come up out of a ditch, walk along the road, and go back in, and they had the footprints of the tracks.
Yeah. And to match it up.
Komodo dragons and monitor lizards, the big heavy monitor lizards have extremely large claws. And, you know, so they have the five-fingered hand and big claws. Their tracks are so evident. A lot of times they'll have a tail slide too. So it's
pretty obvious is what you're saying.
Yeah, they're very thin. Like their fingers are very long and thin because they grasp and climb with them.
Okay.
So when you're looking at a crocodilian foot, because that's why I say crocodilians is because where these guys are said to live, there's also crocodilians, you know, the big Australian crocodiles. They say, oh, that's a crocodile track. Crocodiles have extremely heavy set feet.
Okay.
They're webbed on the back foot.
Okay.
So when you're looking at a crocodile print, it's much more flattened. It's much more pancake-like, big fat toes, and they have claws. But a lot of times they kind of just scrape their whole foot. Their foot isn't as dexterous as a Megalani or Komodo dragon's foot.
Do their bellies rub too?
A lot of times they will. They can pick up, and they have much more deep tail drag.
Right, yes.
They can't really pick up their tail out of the water.
Right.
At least big adults can't really do that. When Megalania can, at least to the very tip.
At least the tip may drag. That and its arms can kind of lift it up they off the ground a lot higher. More than an alligator or crocodile.
Yeah. So that's been – what do you think about Megalania?
Like I said, I think they're still out there. I think there's enough evidence, and like with these tracks, like they're still being found, at least tracks or some eyewitnesses are still claiming to see them. I think with the Australian rainforest being one of the most unexplored places on the planet, on the terrestrial planet, that there's no reason to believe that they aren't still out there, you know?
And then the outback side of it too. I think these guys would be very comfortable in either environment.
Yeah.
So – we did the episode on several Australian episodes. I think it's like 95% of the population lives within 100 miles of the ocean.
That's crazy, ain't it?
And there are people that go through the outback. Have you ever seen the Outback Truckers?
Uh-uh.
It is insane.
Is it a show?
Yeah. Okay. It's insane.
So it's like the other side of the coin from Ice Road Truckers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're both groups are absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
But no, they have like five or six loads, like five or six semi-trailers that they pull with one semi.
Oh, okay.
They're that big, and they camp. They have to camp out on this roads.
Yeah. I mean, it's a barren wasteland.
So the one guy I was watching was literally like, he has his dog, and the camera guy is like, oh, you know, is the dog just a companion? He's like, no, it's security. And he's like, people out here bugging you? He's like, no, but we're 400 miles to the next town, and we're 2,000 miles from our destination.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's nothing out here. So they're setting up, and he's cooking. Like, literally, he has a little kitchenette on one side, and he's cooking outside and stuff. And he looks over, and the dog's pointing. And he's like, all right, get in the cab. And he's like, what? He's like, well, the dingoes have circled us. And he literally takes a flashlight, and there's, like, 15 dingoes that are all around him.
Man, what do they do, though?
Well, they eat him. There's not a documented case of dingoes attacking.
No. I mean, what does the trucker do? Just get inside?
He gets in the cab.
And just wait it out, basically?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, wait till the morning.
Yeah.
Because the dingoes are only confident at night when you can't see them.
Yeah. I didn't know if
it wasn't like wild dogs here making all kinds of noise and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They were like silent and the dog was like alerted.
This dog knew, yeah. Yeah, it was so good thing to have that around.
And they've kind of on the show talked about strange things like that before, like being out there and seeing the Min lights and stuff like that and seeing and hearing yowies and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. The Australian outback, the bush.
The bush is insane.
Yes.
And like Australia is such an underrated place for wildlife because it's some of those extreme, weird, crazy wildlife. It's had its own biosystem for a long time.
And it's not ever really talked about too often. I think for the very reason you said, 90% of people live by the coast.
That, and it's hard to study, right? And
we
talked about that in our several Australian episodes already.
Yeah.
Is that 90, or what was it? I can't remember the exact number now. But like 2/3 of the plants are poisonous. All of the insects are venomous. Like all the spiders are venomous. All the snakes are like 90% of the snakes are venomous. Everything where you're here in the U.S. or, you know, whatever country you're in is like in the U.S. specifically, 90% of our snakes are non-venomous or rear fanged venomous. So they're harmless to people unless you really let them chew on you for a bit.
Yeah.
And then even like our coral snakes and stuff are really venomous coral snakes. Almost only kill kids because they don't like to bite, and they have very little venom. They have very potent venom. They hold very little venom because they're tiny snakes.
Right.
So
and it takes a lot to produce it.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So it's just Australia's the complete opposite of all those things. And the wildlife's amazing, but there's a reason it has secrets still. when you look at the U.S., and I think we're going to have an episode here soon about paranormally endangered. And when you really look at some of these things, I think that's why Australia has maybe some of these things still in abundance, or at least in areas still in abundance. There's no people there to report it. So there's not many people living in the bush, and the people that go in the bush are staying on the roads they have.
Right, yeah. Or it's people that know how to live there, and you ain't getting any accounts or interviews from them, because you know why? They live in the bush.
And the Aborigines were decimated like any native group.
Yeah.
You know, due to expansionism and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So the Aborigines that are left are super friendly people. And if you can still get to one of their storytellers, they have amazing.
That's amazing.
They have just the longest recorded culture of any living group on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So when they're talking about Megalania, they'll tell you stories they can read off the walls still about Megalania from, 40,000 years ago.
Yeah, which is amazing.
And they talk about it's just really neat. They have several animals on the walls that, like I said, they have kind of like a real animal, a in between animal, and a spiritual animal on in these cave paintings. And they kind of talk about that is that, they have, I'm forgetting the giant wombat. They have those from the cave walls, and they've been extinct for 30,000 years.
Right.
And they're like, no, our great, our ancestors dealt with them, and here's what they said about them, and it's 100% right.
That's still my favorite documentary. Like, I go back to every now and then. Which is? Aborigines of Australia. And, like, there's one storyteller that, it's translated into English. And he tells, a bunch of stories about their culture and about, like, what they believe in, why they believe in it. It's just awesome. They show you how they harvest didgeridoos and make them.
I want a didgeridoo, but I know I couldn't play one.
It takes a very, and they teach you how to play it, and mm-hmm. But it's very difficult.
All right, we'll continue with our last monster after this ad break.
Suey! I got me this hot, fresh squonk steak, but man, it tastes bad. Jay, you got anything to fix this up?
I think you need some seasoning on that squonk fixer-up.
Well, what do you got?
How about you try this right here? It's called Bigfoot Breath. Raw garlic seasoning made from fresh garlic.
Oh, give me that. Sure. Well, it did make it taste a lot better. Jeez.
Brought that squonk right alive, didn't it?
I'm going to have to kill more squonks to use more of this seasoning.
Oh, how about you try this instead? How about you try my spicy garlic seasoning?
Oh, give it here. Suey! That's good stuff.
Spicy, but not too spicy.
That's perfect. Can you get these delicacies?
Oh, you can find these on flavorsforest.com. This is our newest spice that's just been created, and it's from Flavors of the Forest.
Make sure you all get some at the links down below. We'll catch you. Suey!
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Makes me laugh every time.
Flavorsforest.com. I don't know what that was.
So can you guess my last animal?
So, okay, at the top of the show, you said when we had the lizard one. What was the other thing you said? Dang it.
No, I've removed those two.
Oh, the unicorn. Oh, yeah, it's not those two.
Because I was going to add them, and then there was enough of them to be their own episodes.
Well, as you mentioned, you were right. The first one I was thinking was the Megalania.
Yeah, I knew that's what you think of the dragon was, and it wasn't.
So the second one I was thinking it was some kind of rhino, but we'll hold off on that.
You're wrong on that one, too.
Well, darn. All right. Spoiler alert.
Actually, giant giraffe.
Oh, yeah, right. Or else I'd know. I would know.
There are several species of giant giraffe with crazy headgear. There's even an okapi cousin that had giant antlers, like a moose. Literally, they were huge.
If Colossus was real, they need to bring those back.
Bring that back, yeah.
Too bad they're not real. They're not bringing any of these things back.
Hey, that's Patreon.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
All right. Now, my last animal for today is...
I don't know. Tell me.
Megatherium.
Oh, okay. The Megatherium.
So this is the Mega episode. Megalanian Megatherium.
Yeah.
So anybody didn't know, Megatherium is one of the largest giant ground sloths ever.
Yep. Is this the South American?
This is South American.
Yeah, this is a big boy.
These guys, as far as we know, never really made it into North America. Cousins of theirs, you know, like the Jefferson's giant ground sloth, which is also humongous. But Megatherium was just absolutely a different level.
Mm-hmm.
It literally means great beast.
Okay.
Megatherium. It's a genus of giant ground sloth endemic to South America in the early Pleistocene to the late Pleistocene. So they made it a long time. Anything before I continue?
Check out their the tunnels they dig.
We're going to get to that.
Okay.
Because their extinction is directly related to us, like everything else on this list. Mm-hmm. It is best known for the elephant-sized type species, Megatherium americanum. That is, like I said, there's several species of Megatherium. It's a family group. But Megatherium americanum is the one, when you hear Megatherium, that's the one people are talking about.
Okay.
Like the elephant size, this monster, you know, 15 foot at the shoulder, 10, 12,000 pounds.
Foot long, like claws.
Bad attitude.
Yeah.
Bad attitude. So, yeah, these guys were absolutely monsters. So, early depictions of these guys, they became extinct only 12,000 to 11,000 years ago. So, once again, another mega animal that survived well past the mass extinction.
Right, yeah.
So why did they disappear? Where'd they go to?
I don't know.
Well,
where'd all the other ones go?
You just make me laugh.
Well, I mean, these like, are...
Here's a hint. All of the ones on the list of are still being seen. Oh. So they didn't go anywhere. They're still out there. It's just South America. The places they live, they're just...
Remote.
They're remote. No, so these guys, they ate much like the modern-day black rhinos. We think they were grazers on forage and twigs of trees, shrubs, and that kind of stuff. They had a black rhino-like snout, like lips. So, like, not quite a trunk or anything like that, but very, very flexible, manipulating lips.
Okay.
So they could selectively eat as they were going.
Gotcha.
And they also had these giant arms and giant claws.
Yes.
And they were used for several different things. When feeding, they're using these giant claws to pull like branches or desirable things to them, mm-hmm. like closer to them,
mm-hmm.
or scrape stuff up. They actually had members, not in Megatherium, but close related members that became the ocean sloths. So there were giant sloths that lived in the ocean and the seas and stuff like that, coastal.
Wow. Swimmers? Swimmers?
Yeah. Well, more like hippos and manatees and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
They could swim, but they weren't really fast, like not like a whale, but like bottom crawlers.
Okay.
But they were still massive. So Megatherium, and there's Megatheridae, and there's Erinotheriums, which is the other big one. But Megatherium americanum is the one we're really going to talk about. So when we first were discovering these guys, their bones were just, they're massive. You know, we're talking mammoth-sized animals. And we thought they were really solitary. And they were kind of predatory bullies. So they were omnivores, which is kind of something you don't get depicted very often. To where they were eating much, not quite like a black bear. Like, let's say 80% of their diet was plant matter.
Okay.
Maybe 20% was protein. Their close cousins, like anteaters and sloths and that kind of stuff. So, and do you know that? Sloths and anteaters are pretty close related.
Did not know that.
If you take away the two living sloths we have today.
Okay.
Are the last living members of the whole sloth lineage.
Okay.
That we know about. And the two-toed sloth and the three-toed sloth are not closely related whatsoever.
Yes.
They're actually convergent evolutions of the two distinct families of sloths, the giant sloths and the ocean sloths.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Isn't that crazy?
It is kind of, yeah.
And they happen to look really similar. This one has two claws, one has three claws, that kind of deal. So these giants would kind of predator bully. So with saber-tooths and that kind of stuff, saber-tooth tigers, these guys are actually dealing with the tigers, not the cats.
Okay.
They would come up on carcasses and they would bully other carnivores off them, using their size and their power and that kind of stuff. And we have examples of this, not by Megatherium americanum, but its smaller cousin, the one in North America, where they had like a saber-toothed cat stayed and tried to defend its kill.
Yeah.
And it ate the cat as well. So it looked like it just swiped it and crushed it.
Oh.
And not saying a cat couldn't kill him, but you got to get to the neck.
Right.
And these things are really tall, mm-hmm. and there's really, really big claws and arms and fur.
You got about one shot, and yeah. It better be an ambush.
You better get it once. Like, yeah. If you're going to shoot at the king, you better not miss, kind of deal.
Right, exactly.
So they would do the same thing to people, we believe. Now, here's where the evidence for this is kind of scattered, because a lot of these cultures, you know, we don't have good records for this. But what they would do is, we believe, is if humans had an active kill, that these guys would come in and, you know, bully the humans off it.
Yeah.
They may have even been either a hyper aggressive towards people, whether they were eating them or not is a question, or they may have been like, they may have been our predators in a way. So there's one famous foot tracks, and I believe this is in Colorado, to where you can see a mom and a kid walking down the banks.
Humans. Yeah, yeah.
Walking down the banks of the, you find the footprints, you know, fossilized footprints.
Mm-hmm.
Walking down the banks of this ancient lake. And you could see where the mom was carrying the kid every once in a while and stuff like that.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, it's not great.
Wow, okay.
And then later you found where it had crossed paths with a giant ground sloth. And then the mom then came back later with no child.
Yeah, that's not good.
So they think that the ground sloth may have killed the kid on purpose or may have ate the kid, all that stuff.
I'm hoping she gave him a piggyback ride and they ran out of there. That's ain't that crazy how that whole, like, basically story or encounter was fossilized?
Mm-hmm.
That's astronomical.
So the total length was about 25 feet long and about 15 foot tall at the shoulders of their standing up. So keep in mind, most semis, I think, are 11 or 12 feet tall, like at the top. So another 3 feet on top of that was when these things were up and looking at you. Just being monsters. So there's some evidence that suggests that at night they would come into early human settlements and just destroy everything.
Yeah.
Because they're looking for food. Oh, they had really developed all, they didn't have great eyes, but they had really good sense of smell.
Yeah.
And they had these giant chewing jaws.
That would be, I don't know, that would probably be one of the scariest animals to encounter.
This is this whole list.
Yeah.
The one I don't want to deal with. I think I could deal with the cat. Like, probably the cat would probably kill me, but I think I could scare the cat, right? The cats aren't
maybe
dumb.
Yeah.
You know, so you can kind of intimidate them a little bit. This thing is the size of an elephant with machetes on its hands.
Yeah, and a bad attitude.
Yeah,
no, thank you.
So you mentioned something already, is their massive tunnel systems.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
So before this recent discovery, we used to think that they were solitary. Maybe mom taking care of calf, that kind of deal for a couple years, and then that would be it. We actually know that they were semi-social.
Okay.
Due to this discovery, because they found these massive tunnels big enough for cars and trucks to drive through.
I'm just telling you, if you have not seen these tunnels,
look up the Megatherium tunnels.
Please.
And they thought it was dug by ancient technology.
It looks like it.
You just see these, what looks like excavator marks.
Yeah.
Those are claw marks.
Claw marks, yeah.
From this animal.
It does. Like, there's a lot of patterns with, like, old caves or even, like, you know, like in the Great Pyramid, you know, like the main entry door, I think, you know, when it was originally built where it's at. Mm-hmm. But there's that other tunnel that they bored through. And that tunnel that they bored through to get into the pyramid, the first time it was broken into or whatever, it has like the tool marks on the walls, which are, you know, like the striation patterns, basically, of them carving away. That's what these look like.
So there you go. The pyramids were built by Megatherium.
No, infiltrated by Megatherium.
I think they were built.
Well, no, these weren't. These were only in the tunnel, like, boring into it. I know what you're saying, but it's still, it's weird, though, how it does, it's very close.
So, with these tunnels, they had one central chamber, and that's the one you always see pictures of,
mm-hmm.
is these big tunnels.
Mm-hmm.
They were probably two or three animals wide, and they couldn't figure out why one animal would be digging such a developed tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
As they continued to excavate them, they found separate sleeping chambers. So now they think there would maybe be four or five families of Megatherium sharing one central tunnel.
That's awesome.
So this is a completely different picture of these guys.
Yeah. Like social.
Highly social.
Yeah.
At least tolerable of each other.
Yeah.
They had a tighter family groups where it may have been mom taking care of a couple calves. We don't know if maybe their one thought is that dad, one adult male, would be the ruler of this tunnel system.
Mm.
And each chamber would be a different female with his calf.
Ah, okay.
So that, and his job is to dig and protect the tunnel and be the guard. So he could have several different breeding females.
Yeah.
But he could watch them all at the same time, like as a defensive position.
Kind of like a cult.
Kind of like a cult.
Yeah.
With a really big, really big priest.
Yeah. The defense system.
Like, and they stand like that too.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Look up golden anteaters and how they defensively stand. That's how these guys stood, except they were 15 feet tall and 10,000 pounds.
Yeah.
So there's evidence to suggest how, at least in North America, cousins of Megatherium, how we got rid of them. So like I said, this thing would come into camp at night and destroy everything. There's evidence that they were eating kids.
That's awful.
But unlike the saber-tooths, unlike the other animals, we couldn't fight back, right? Even if you stuck this thing with a spear or nothing like that, their rib cages, if you look at the bones of these guys, they were armored tooth and nail. They'd probably win against a mastodon in a fight. The pachyderms, they'd probably win in that altercation.
Yeah.
Because they were just so heavily built.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we get rid of them? How, you know, you have this monster that is eating kids, as far as we know. So what they would do is that they would basically either burn them to death or suffocate them. They'd go to the mouth, because you guys slept a long time. They go to the mouth of these caves that they were digging.
Yep.
And they would start fires, which would suck all the oxygen out of the cave.
Like we did to the Red Hair Giants of Lovelock Cave.
The exact same thing. These may have been the Red Hair Giants.
They were just megatheriums.
Just megatheriums. So they would suck all the oxygen out. So one of two things would happen is they would die in their sleep, and then they would, you know, just leave them. Or the megatheriums would try to run out of the cave and run through a giant fire and then catch themselves on fire.
Yeah.
They actually have some scorched bones and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was not good.
No.
So we took...
Horrible death.
But probably the scariest one in this list.
Oh, yeah. Effective, though.
So, and then at the also end of this, this is not one-sided. There has been another fossilized human footprints showing how we hunted Megatherium.
Hmm. Okay. How did they capture that?
It wasn't the Megatherium Americanum, the giants. Oh. It was a smaller cousin.
Okay,
about 8 to 9 foot tall at max. So maybe like 2,000 pounds, which, you know, is much, a fifth the size.
A little bit more manageable.
So what they would do is they'd actually dance around them. And we have these fossilized altercations, like in the footprints. So the sloths, they'd get them to rear up. So the only, when they're on the all fours, they couldn't get to the belly with no ribs.
Okay.
So sloths will do this naturally. Sloths and anteaters, their close cousins, will rear up and show their claws and look bigger.
Yeah.
So they can swipe. So what they would do is keep them moving, focus on one guy with prodding. So they'd rear up, and the other guys would start stabbing him in the belly.
Oh, gotcha.
And they actually started butchering a lot of the smaller species. Phew. So we burnt the big guys. Anybody that was not, you know, we could deal with, we stabbed to death until they died. And we also think that we hunted a lot of the juveniles. So there was, that was the size right when mom would kind of let them go on their own.
Okay.
So we're probably that reason that they're not around.
I was just saying, that's mostly, we're responsible probably for the entirety of their species being gone.
They did pretty good up until then.
Well, it seems like a pretty good effective body plan.
And then their food sources, like I said, they were lowland grazers, scrublands of South America.
The food's
there. They would have changed with the rainforest development because the rainforest is very new. Mm-hmm. The Amazon rainforest is pretty new. But there are still scrublands in South America.
Right, yeah.
There's still massive scrublands.
Food's still there.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Either they're all extinct or they went really, really far underground. And now they're living in inner earth or something.
Let's talk about the cryptid side of this. So, Metagrossos, massive monsters, a terrifying beast, is ripping apart ripping out the tongues of cattle. It's known as the Mapinguari.
Oh, okay.
Or the beast of Metagrosso, a huge Brazilian state. So that's Metagrosso.
Okay.
It's a name which translates in English roughly thick brush. So okay. It's, you know, thick brushes and that kind of stuff.
That was weird. That light bulb just went out.
Did it go out or did it get dimmer?
I think it went out.
Because I thought I noticed it earlier getting dimmer in here.
It definitely went out.
Okay.
That was weird.
Odd. Okay, focus, Justin. Yes. Thick brushes, which is dominated by plains, plateaus, and some rainforest. But these plains and plateaus have tons and tons of scrubland vegetation.
Okay.
Which is what Megatherium was eating.
Right, yeah.
You know, it's very much black rhino diet.
Buffet.
Yeah, it is. So it's been an ideal location for such a beast. Randy Murrell, who studied the history of the Mapinguari, is said to encounter by the native legend. The Mapinguari is a prehistoric cryptid that reportedly lived and still is reported to live in the Amazon rainforest of South America, particularly in Brazil and Patagonia. It's constantly described as having red hair, long arms, powerful claws that could tear apart palm trees with ease, a sloping back, a crocodile-like hide on the exposed skin, the bullets cannot penetrate very easy, and a second mouth on the belly with backwards feet.
Mm.
Now, does that sound weird?
Well, yes and no.
So let's talk about this being a giant ground sloth, because okay. In my opinion, the Mapinguari is a giant ground sloth. It may not be Megatherium americanum, but there are several species of Megatherium right. that were fitting this closer range.
Let's look at it through the lens of a giant ground sloth.
Sloping back, 100%.
Yep.
They were knuckle walkers, right? So when they're walking on all fours, they're walking on their knuckles and their front paws, and they actually walk on the sides of their back feet.
Okay.
Because they were they went from an arboreal life to a terrestrial life very quickly. So they never got the chance to evolve those different feet patterns.
Okay.
So their footprints almost look like they're walking backwards.
Oh, okay. That's where that comes from.
Yeah. So the alligator-like skin on the exposed skin of the Mapinguari. So the Mapinguari has red hair everywhere, but where it has exposed skin, it has really rough alligator skin. So we know from Megatherium fossils and imprints and those kind of things, and even some like skin impressions, they had almost scaly armored skin on the exposed parts of their hands and arms.
Just like calloused, maybe?
No, it's almost actual scales. It's a certain type of calcification of hair.
Carapace.
That's not right, bugs. No, it's like what rhinos have and what.
Okay.
Anteaters, if you look at their knuckles, they have little scales. And if you look at, oh gosh, I'm forgetting the word.
Fur.
The armor-plated armadillo, or the armor, it's arm like armadillos, but.
Yeah, you're right.
The most trafficked mammal in the world.
Pangolin.
Pangolins, oh my gosh.
Pangolin.
Which is a cousin of the anteaters, cousin of sloths.
Yes.
So they had pangolin-like scales.
Okay.
So yeah, that makes sense too. Now, and the heavy-plated skin, the big claws, all that fits, right? The second mouth in the stomach is a hard one for people to rationalize.
Right, yeah.
And it's supposedly oozing all the time.
Mmm. I bet it smells good, huh?
It smells great. Giant ground sloths actually had a gland on their stomach, a scent gland.
Right.
That would ooze scent or must or, you know, all kinds of chemicals that they would use to mark territories and actually communicate with each other.
Yeah.
So it would look to anybody, doesn't it? It looks like a hole that ooze just leaks out of.
Yeah, that's...
And Mapinguari is said to not eat its victims. It's said to just rip them apart and take certain parts of them, like the tongues and livers. And it's said to have a really, really bad attitude.
Yeah, it doesn't like you. I wonder why. Like
a giant ground sloth.
It's almost like all of its ancestors
were burnt to death.
Yeah, shoved in a cage and either asphyxiated or, yes, burnt.
So, renowned Dr. Bernard Heuvelmann, for being a story of the Mapinguari to the attention of the public, he was in Bigfoot hunting community. Mm-hmm. One story really stood out. The menacing strikes occurred decades ago involving a man identified as Incento, an explorer taking part in an expedition to the Urban River. Incento and his team were in hot pursuit of a group of monkeys. They intended on bagging and taking them back to civilization. So they were literally catching, killing animals to bring back to civilization.
Okay.
One particular night, when the sun was long gone, the area was bathed in darkness, and something vile and meandering put an appearance. It was the appearance accompanied by something hair-raising. It sounded like a panic-filled cries of a man echoing in the dense jungles around them.
No.
So it's super late at night. They're really, really, really deep in the rainforest, and you hear what sounds like a man being murdered.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Then something worse still happened. Incento's ears were filled with the sounds of extremely heavy, resonating loud footsteps in the forest. So thump, thump, two legs, just a monster coming towards him. There was no doubt Incento's mind was going on. Something huge, lumbering, bipedal was racing towards them with great speed.
Okay.
It was not good news. Not at all. Suddenly, the loud footsteps were replaced by something else. Ear-splitting silence.
Ah.
So you hear screaming way off.
And then
thumping coming right at your camp.
And nothing.
And then it goes silent.
Hmm.
But to his horror... Oh, do you have something to say?
I was just saying, I mean, if this is a ground sloth, I mean, it's kind of weird bipedal foot sound and footsteps. Because, they rear up, but I don't think they don't.
They walked on two legs a lot.
They did walk on two? Yeah. Okay.
Not for great distance or anything like that, but they could. A lot of the footprints show them walking on two legs, especially when they're feeding, doing that kind of behavior.
Okay.
But if this is an aggressive ground sloth, he's going to have his arms up ready to fight. Anyways, moving on. To his horror, he could see something in the dark. A large, dark, man-like lurking figure in the shadows, possibly waiting for the right time to launch out an all-out attack. So this thing is poised up with its arms up. Looks like a big guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just waiting for something. What happened next? The beast let loose another alarming, ear-splitting roar, guttural in nature. Acting on instinct more than anything else, Incento fired his rifle in the direction of the creature, something which only enraged the monster as it hurled itself towards him. Fortunately, another bullet deterred the Mapinguari from coming any closer, and it vanished into the undergrowth. I think the original story said they shot it in like the side of the head. Did not kill it. It just made it leave. showing a high degree of common sense, they spent the night perched into the high trees.
Yeah.
So immediately they're like, you know what? We're going to sleep up there with the jaguars.
Yeah, tonight, yes.
They kept awake by the horrendous malevolent roar of the unknown animal. The animal never left all night. It circled in the deep forest, roaring and just destroying trees all around them. And they were in this really big tree. Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, absolutely.
When the morning finally came, planked up enough courage to climb down the tree. The only calling card of the night's turmoil was splashes of blood on the ground from where it had been shot, a strong, sour odor filling the air, and a grease-like substance on local or nearby trees. The violent visitor was never identified. Interesting enough, local folklore suggested that it was the Mapinguari has the ability to make a person disoriented, inducing nausea and a sense of vertigo, and even stealing unconsciousness in a person from its roar.
Infrasound.
This may not have been a mere myth or legend. The entire possibility, the potential of these American cousins of Bigfoot, that's people ought to think, people think that it's Bigfoot.
Right.
The Mapinguari has the ability to use infrasound. Now, I'm one for believing that it's a giant ground sloth, especially from the sound of the appearance and stuff like that. The way they describe this, the oily substance, people say it could be that stuff Bigfoot has. I think it was more the scent marker.
The stink gland thing.
And it may have been putting it on the trees to let other giant ground sloth or Mapinguari know that there's things in the area.
Or just even...
to stay away from the people.
Or even just like other animals. It's like marking its spot. Like, this is my area. It's going to be my kill.
Yeah. I'm a big believer that these are the Mapinguari is a giant ground sloth of some kind. One of the megatheriums.
Yeah.
If not, there is also Melodons, which is another group of giant ground sloth that it didn't get quite as big. You know, most of those guys were between 500 and 1,000 pounds, but still very, very impressive animals in their own right.
Right, yeah.
And I think a lot of them, I pick Megalania for a lot of, not Megalania, Megatherium.
Yeah.
Is the tunnels. There's reports of these caves with treasures in them, hidden in these rainforests in these plateau areas, guarded by the Mapinguari. And I'm pretty sure it's just giant ground sloths and there's nothing in there. I'm pretty sure that they see a monster guarding a hole, and they think that, oh, there must be treasure down there, like a dragon.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's just its kids.
Yeah, that is the treasure.
For it.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So I think that's, you know, it's still, I mean, the behaviors sound very reminiscent. These guys had a bad attitude. They'd go out of their way to kill things for the fun of it. But yeah, what do you think of the Mapinguari?
Scary. Well,
the giant ground sloth.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Megatherium.
Megatherium. Yeah, I'd like to hope they're still out there. I just do. I hope they're still there. And I hope people just leave them alone and stop burning them if they do ever rediscover them. Let's bring them back.
I think they made it to the hollow earth.
That's, yeah.
They just dug deep enough. They're like, oh, there's a back door now.
Yeah, we'll stay here.
And they got big.
They're not stabbing us to death here.
So I found a weird cave painting.
Okay.
And so before we end the episode, I just want to talk about this. 44,000-year-old cave art shows a human hunt filled with fantastical creatures.
Interesting.
Found in Indonesia, an ancient cave painting shows an archaeologist interpret a half-human, half-animal hunters. The scene appears to be the scene appears to have wild boar, wild cattle, and human-like figures. The oldest human-like or lifelike figure carvings ever found in the world, 44,000 years is right at that mark. Adoring back to the Indonesian caves, it's a 15-foot panel. It's likely over 44,000 years old. Richard said they found an illustration white appear to be representing the oldest evidence of our ancestors telling stories through drawings.
Okay.
So there's just why I put this in there, and everybody can look it up. It's at this time where people are taking the cave paintings very, very seriously as depicting life around them, not storytelling. But then with this special one, they're like, oh, this has to be storytelling because it has fantastical creatures
in it. Right, yeah.
I don't know either way if it's storytelling or not. I'm just saying that they're right out because it has everything from a half crocodile, half human, a reptilian looking creature. But it has dog, half people.
What are those called? Cephalo, I can't remember the name.
I was thinking more dog men.
Well, yeah, dog-headed men, or just dog men in general.
And it even shows one depiction of a shapeshifter.
The
figure in this trail starts as human and turns into a creature.
Like a Uinta Basin, Skinwalker.
Skinwalkers.
Yeah.
And I kind of think let's say this is depicting not something fantastical, it's depicting something really seen. It could be our first evidence of these Skinwalker like type behaviors, where these with shamans or witches or whatever you want to call them, developing the powers to change into creatures.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was interesting when I was looking up some of this stuff that I came across this article. It's in Indonesia. It's if you look at where this is, it is like on a cliff that they are in a like they are here. I'll show you the picture. They're literally standing on a bamboo shoot to get to where these paintings
are. Wow, so it's up really high.
Yeah.
So the Aborigines, like when I told you I watched that documentary,
they have 44,000 years too.
And they talk about their cave paintings being, and there's some of theirs are really high up in caves. And some are even on the ceiling.
Yeah, I've seen the Aborigines on the ceiling.
And they're high up there. You have to, you know, have something to climb up there. But they said that this is what their elders, their storytellers would say, is that it was the beings there, the tall white, like ghost-like beings, would go up there and they would paint those paintings.
They paint those
stuff. Yeah.
I found one more, just throwing this out there. In Utah, there's actually a cave painting with a Utah's Black Dragon Canyon that shows a giant winged monster. It's the only, as far as we know, the only fantastical animal on the entire mural.
Wow.
So
why would they make up one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything, I guess not the only fantastical. There's also bug-eyed person in there, but Utah's where the ant people are.
Yes, absolutely. It is. Four Corners area.
Yeah. So just wanted to say that this whole thing, there's only two. There's hundreds of animals, hundreds of paintings. There's only two fantastical, quote-unquote, creatures. One is literally a giant black giant, like a dragon with wings.
Thunderbird, maybe?
It literally looks like a dragon, like it's a European dragon.
In that area, too, like the West?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the other one shows the bug-eyed people.
Yeah.
Which we'll have to do an episode on the ant people, because Africa and America has the ant people.
Yep. Interesting.
Before we wrap up, I just want to say, I called all these creatures monsters, because for our early ancestors, that's what they called them. But if you notice, they're called monsters due to their size, their abilities, and their taste a lot of times for humans. But every one of them had something in common, that their extinction or their decimation was directly related to us.
So who?
Who is the monster?
Monster.
And I believe every one of these that we covered today in some way, shape, or form is still alive today and are cryptids.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Every one of them. I mean, maybe not Homotherium as a species directly, or maybe not Megatherium, but I do believe there are giant ground sloths still hidden out there.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't even cover the White's Hill monster and stuff like that, which was giant ground sloth that they caught in northern or southern Mexico, the rainforest, and brought up here on a train.
Huh.
Which we'll do with it. White Hull monster, I believe, is what it was, where they got it drunk and they put it in a train. You remember, we did the one in Indiana, too, that was a similar story, where they caught two of them, and they said as long as they kept giving it beer, it would stay drunk, and it would stay docile.
Yeah.
And the second they sold it and it got sober, it literally destroyed the train car it was in.
That's nuts. I mean, we do some crazy stuff nowadays here like that, but imagine having a giant ground sloth. You just got drunk in the back.
Like, I got this thing.
Yeah, I got to keep it drunk.
So what do you think about this episode?
No, monsters that made us. I mean, we know about these monsters. There's a lot of folklore, a lot of history to them. You know, they could have had played a big role in developing like our psyche and dealing with the monsters out there, the big animals out there, and staying safe. But no, talking about the fear of the woods and the just nature in general.
I mean, like these guys are probably why we're scared of the dark. If you look at every one of them, cats and Megatherium and Megalania and the short-faced bear.
I mean,
imagine if you're around the fire and that's any one of their faces is what starts coming out of the darkness.
Yeah.
Everybody's dead.
Yeah, pretty much.
The giant lizard would be the easiest one, I think, to get away from.
Maybe.
Because it wants the fire more than anything.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you had the jump on, like, running away first, but if it would charge you.
Right, no, I'm not, I'm saying luck. If it's coming in, that's when I did this episode, I was thinking, if you're sitting around a fire 40, 50,000 years ago, right?
Yeah.
You're sitting around a fire, what comes out of the darkness to get you?
Right.
It's these guys, mm-hmm. The big cats, the giant, like, the short-faced bears ate us in bears.
Oh, yeah.
That was their food. They liked predators. They liked eating other predators.
Ambush you at night.
Well, to just run in at 40 miles an hour and start ripping people apart.
Right, yeah.
And then the Megatherium, just an elephant-sized, machete-wielding monster. It would come in because it smelled your food.
Right, yeah.
And then, it just was like, I want that, and I'll kill every one of you because I want it.
And I'll get it, yep.
And then the big cats that literally bit the backs of our skulls off.
You're not lying.
These are the monsters that formed, like you said, the human psyche.
Yeah.
These are probably why we're scared of the dark in some way, shape, or form.
I would believe it.
Because every one of them was more developed in the dark than we were.
The world was like, it was just so, I want to say different back then. You know, now we live in luxury and modern technology and everything's easy and safe.
I mean, it's hard to think about the animals we have left today. We're not the scariest ones. I mean, you think about tigers and grizzly bears and those kind of things. I'm like, well, grizzly bears, like 40,000 years ago, we had the short-faced bear that was two times as big. And
right.
And they just ate us.
Like, we had wild dogs out there, and now we got pugs and chihuahuas.
So these are the monsters that made us. And after all of it, we're the ones still standing, and we executed every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I think they're all still alive in some way, shape, or form today. And I don't think we were the reason for any of the whole reason for any of their extinctions. I do think we were a lot of times the final nail in the coffin.
That last little push.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else to add?
We like exterminating things from the planet.
As a species. It's just anything that scares us.
Yeah.
Right. And then we, like you said, we build these houses. We separate ourselves from nature because it scared us.
Essentially.
Yeah. Well, I have been the great and powerful mystery.
I've been J Clone 347.
We'll catch you next week, guys.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Crypt of the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J Clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye!
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.